And there goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice.
8:43 in the morning, 40 degrees under cloudy skies.
And here in the Karrison Studios, we are talking with Benjamin Radford. He'll be speaking at the Mesa Public Library on Thursday as part of the Author Speak series about his new book, Bad Clowns. Good morning, Benjamin. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Well, give us a little history about yourself. I know your last book was on the Chupacabra.
Actually, it's my second to last book was on the Hispanic vampire beast. My very last book before this was called Mysterious New Mexico.
Ah.
And that was a collection of about a dozen mysteries and unusual things around our land of enchantment, everything from the miracle staircase of Loreto to La Llorona sightings, various ghost reports, folklore, all from a sort of science-based, skeptical, but informed perspective.
Mm-hmm. So you like this sort of odd, off-the-beaten-track things.
I do. I've always been fascinated by them. I grew up in Corrales, outside of Albuquerque, and when I was a teenager, I would see the TV shows, and I'd read magazines and books, and there are all these exciting stories of monsters in London dungeons and UFOs over
right.
Russia and the Bermuda Triangle. And, like anybody, I was fascinated by them, but I said, well, hold on, I'm just a kid from Corrales, right? How come none of this is happening near me?
Uh-huh.
And so when I became more of a writer and I grew up, I decided, well, why don't I go ahead and try to, investigate and research some of these things and see what I can find that it's here in my home state.
Mm-hmm. So Bad Clowns is, of course, a lot beyond New Mexico, but what got you interested in that? What drew you to that?
Yeah, well, it's curious. I had always, I didn't write the book out of some latent fear of clowns. I mean, a lot of people, when I mention the subject of my book, they either sort of recoil in horror, whether it's mock horror or not, I can't really tell. But there's a certain unease to it. But I found that there tends to be a bipolarity to it. Either some people, are just adore clowns or just frightened of them. And I'm sort of somewhere in the middle. I take it from a sort of more detached, quasi-academic perspective. So it's not like I was terrified as a 4-year-old of clowns. Part of it was just that I was, one of the things that draws me to a subject of my books, and this is my ninth book, I want to do something that hasn't been done before. So, I'm not interested in writing another book on the Civil War. I don't really want to write another book on the state history of North Dakota or NASCAR. I'm the subjects that interest me and intrigue me and make me want to spend, in some cases years of my life researching them are ones that haven't been done before. And that's one thing that intrigued me was that despite the popularity of these evil clown characters, you have the Joker, the DC Comics villain, portrayed, of course, by Jack Nicholson and Heath Ledger. You've got Pennywise, the monster in the Stephen King novel It. You've got all these evil and malicious, malcontented clowns in pop culture, and yet nobody had actually done a book on it. And so I was frankly surprised. I began writing the book about 10 years ago, and in 2006, and I did a couple interviews for it, and it got shelved because I was busy. I was going to grad school. I was doing other books and this and that. And then after my last book came out from UNM Press, they asked, what's your next book? That's a sort of standard closing question. And I was like, well, I've started writing a book on clowns. And they're like, why would you do a book on clowns? Bad clowns. They're like, okay, all right, I can see where you're going with that. So to be honest, I had assumed that in the 10 years between the time I first started researching the book and when I got the contract for it, I had assumed that someone else had already done it. When you're an author, one of the first things you do, pitching a book is, you look for competing titles. Who else has already done this?
Mm-hmm.
Show, part of what you do is you do internet search and you go to the library and you find 6 or 10 or 12 other books that are of a similar topic, and you explain why your book is different, you know, what you're going to bring that's fresh to it. And in this case, nobody had done it. And I'm like, well, hell, if no one else is going to do it, then I guess I'll do it.
Sure, that's actually kind of amazing. You obviously did tons of research. I mean, the things in your book go from Ronald McDonald to clown porn. It's just kind of amazing, the wide array yeah. of stuff. You've got 10 pages of references and then lots of pages of index. How did you research? I mean, how did you know when you had enough?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And that's always one of the most difficult parts of writing a nonfiction book, is figuring out the scope. Right, I mean, how are you going to define it such that you don't spend 10 years researching it and you know, there's just not that much there. And so, you know, the first thing I did was I went for the low-hanging fruit. So I figured, okay, well, I'm going to cover the fictional clowns, the ones in TVs and movies and literature, and also in music and whatever else. And so once I had that, then I said, okay, well, where else do I go with it? So then the next logical step was real-life clowns. And so then I got into, you know, killer clowns. And there's, you know, people who have attacked other people dressed as clowns. For example, a couple of years ago, one of the heads of a Mexican drug lord gangs was killed by a clown at his birthday party. It's not funny, but it's sort of it's slightly funny. But there's actually footage of this. A clown went in there and shot this person, and then you get into the real life clowns, and so that opened the door to I have a small section on Native American clowns, for example, Hopi clowns. Then I have a section on what are called dip clowns. These are
fascinating.
The dunk tank clowns.
Well,
right.
you go to the
fair and they insult you until you buy $10 worth of balls and throw it at them. So that was really the most interesting part of the book was seeing all the different variations, the nuances, and tracing the clown character throughout history into the modern incarnations.
Well, the dip clown part, I thought it was really interesting to hear his perspective. And you had a New Mexico State Fair clown talking, but he talked about how to know how to throw out the best insults to get people to come
yeah.
and pay money. And he mentioned that the dip clowns tend to be looked down on by the other circus performers. But he said, look at all the money we bring in, you know, because
exactly.
they reach out and they know how to lure people in.
Exactly. It's a clown. It's a variation of the clown that isn't obvious. I mean, when you're thinking of clowns, you don't really go to dip clowns. But it's absolutely, I mean, you know, this is a clown that is paid to insult people.
Is it a definition
of a bad clown? But of course, it's within a certain context. And so it's okay if he's insulting you within the context of, you know, we all know it's just a performance and this and that. It's basically stand-up comedy and insult comedy. So
because that makes you want to go buy some balls to dunk them in the tank.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not often you get paid for the privilege of being insulted by a clown.
Uh-huh. Well, another thing that I had no awareness of, you mentioned in the early 2000s in Paris and other places, people dressing up as clowns and attacking people. I thought, where did that come from?
Yeah, that was another chapter in the book. I was one of the cool things about it was that I was able to cover that whole story in my writings for Discovery News, because I'm also a freelance writer for Discovery, and the whole idea of the stalker clowns is what I call them. There's been a handful of clowns there are people who dress up as clowns and they don't necessarily attack anybody. They just sort of they'll go to their local park or just wandering the streets, usually at night, dressed as a clown. And as you can imagine, that tends to freak people out because, that's not what you want to see walking around at night. But of course, you can call the police, but it's not illegal to dress as a clown around at night. I mean, that's just, it was this really fascinating, essentially it was a copycat effect. The very first case of that I covered, the first one ever, was a person in Northampton, England, that dressed up as the Northampton clown. And he made his own Facebook page, and he had fans, people, take photos of them with the Northampton clown. And, he wasn't friendly, he wasn't unfriendly, it was obviously sort of a publicity stunt slash performance art. But then there were copycats of that and copycats of that. And so even the Northampton Stalker Clown was the first one. Soon, about a year later, almost always right before Halloween. There's an interesting pattern here. Right before Halloween, somewhere, somebody, there was one in Long Island, there was one in California, and there were several repeats in France where people dressed as clowns and basically just scared the hell out of people for fun.
Just for fun. Well, you start out, in the beginning of the book at least, you talk about Punch and Judy, and although I'd heard of them, I didn't really know what that whole show was about. It's pretty darn awfully evil when you look at it, but it was considered comedy back in the ages. Do you have any sociological perspective on why that would have been that way now, and now we would say, oh, that's abuse?
Well, another interesting nuance of the whole clown thing that isn't immediately apparent. Yeah, I mean, you have the Punch and Judy show, which has been performed in England for about 300 years, since the 1660s. And you're right. I mean, even to this day, it's not just in the dusty dustbins of history. It's you know, the Punch and Judy shows are still performed to this day, you know, in beach resorts in England and elsewhere. Part of the Mr. Punch's character, I think part of his appeal is he has an everyman appeal. If you look at the dialogue, even though he's a serial killing, wife abusing, baby killing monster, if you take it at face value, it's a horrific story. It's just this nasty, evil creature. But he's you know, the person that performs the puppet, he's known as the professor, and the professor keeps it fresh. And so there's always current jokes. There's commentary of the day. So it's very much the sort of version of what you would see on a late-night talk show.
And so maybe it's appealing to the universal frustrations we all have and going totally off the wall in reaction.
That's part of it, is that you know, there's a strong everyman character to Mr. Punch. For example, in the first part of the play, and there's not one set script, the play varies from performance to performance, but in the general play, he's originally irritated by a screaming baby. And he gets upset about it, and he calls his wife Judy, and then they have this big fight about it, and he ends up throwing the baby out the window. And part of the reason that hooks people is, of course, that we're all irritated by screaming babies. Even those of us who love babies, having the screaming baby be the focus of Mr. Punch's irritation brings the audience in, because we've all been there. Now, of course, we all wouldn't do what he does with fictional context, but that's part of what makes him so popular, is he sort of does what we're afraid to do. He sort of is our id, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we are talking with author Benjamin Radford. He'll be speaking at the library at the Author Speak series on Thursday evening. Benjamin, have you ever dressed up as a clown?
Not in recent memory. probably about 10 years ago, and I did a couple of very small magic tricks, and I quickly realized this was beyond my ability, so I turned into a reclusive writer.
Okay, I could just see you doing your presentation while dressed as a clown.
I thought about that, actually. I gave a couple of book talks and signings here in Albuquerque in the past few weeks, and, mm-hmm. and at one point I said, "Do you want me dressed as a clown?" He said, "Do you want to bring people in or scare them away?"
Good point. Yeah, I saw you on the news when you were doing the other book signings, so you're definitely getting out there with this. Have you been getting good reactions?
I have, actually. I've been pleased with it, and especially since this topic is sort of different than my normal subject, but it has broad appeal, and you know, I've had people who've come in and weren't otherwise interested in clowns, and I think part of it is that almost everybody has some angle into it. Either you're afraid of clowns, you love clowns. There are various people who are ambivalent about clowns,
mm-hmm.
So I think that because I cover such a broad spectrum of bad clowns, there's an angle in it for everybody.
Now, you'll be speaking here on Thursday. Are you talking mostly about bad clowns, or will you be talking more as an author and about the various other books you've written?
I'll be doing both. Obviously, people, if you know, with the new book, that's what people are most interested in. But, you know, again, I've written 8 other books. I'm happy to talk about the writing process or any of the other ones, or just writing in general. Honestly, the most fun part for me as an author is the Q&A, because I already know this stuff. I wrote the book. I've done it. And so I'm much more interested usually in, after I've talked about it, to hear the questions from the audience, who are actually, they often give me really fascinating questions that I hadn't thought of. So that's the fun part for me.
Have you heard about clowns you hadn't come across in your research from the audience?
Yes. In fact, you know, almost immediately what happened was, after the book came out, you know, and it's the same thing happened when I wrote the Chupacabra book. You know, I did a book tracking Chupacabra in 2011. And, of course, you know, among my friends and colleagues and fans, people, they know that I do Chupacabra stuff. And so, you know, once a week or once a month, someone will send me some latest random news story on Chupacabras, which, you know, I expect that. But that's happening with clowns now. A week doesn't go by that someone doesn't send me a link to some weird clown story. So there's already enough for a second edition. So if I can sell out the first printing, then I'll have a part two.
Well, that definitely keeps your life interesting, doesn't it?
It does. It keeps me off the streets.
So we will see you up here at Mesa Public Library. I'm assuming you'll have copies of your book as well to sell.
I will. I'll be looking forward to, it's been a while since I've been up there. I'll be looking forward to coming up there and seeing everybody.
Fantastic. We look forward to seeing you Thursday evening at Mesa Public Library.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.